Blog Talk Radio.
This is one mic. Can we be real? I'm going to stretch the line of people. Now, if you step over the line, I'm going to say something about it. This is one mic. This is one mic, please. Welcome to One Mic. This is D. Wills. We're in the building, about to have a great week and weekend. This is a big week for sports. It's Super Bowl weekend, but we got a lot going on. And I'm excited to really get into this show. We're going to start out here by blessing the mic. And so I got to bring in my co-host for the evening. I'm just glad to have it. My co-host, this should be an interesting show. I'm going to start with, our lead person on Inside the Park with Hank. Yeah, we got Hank here in the building. How you doing, Hank?
Hey, man, I'm doing real good. Always glad to be on the show. It's been a long time since I've been here. So in that case, I have to say Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Ramadan, Happy Hanukkah.
Man, I want to say something. So, folks who don't know, Hank resides in the Ann Arbor, Michigan area, a big Michigan fan. And it sounds like John Harbaugh, Jim Harbaugh, and the whole Harbaugh family had a party over there on signing day. Can you give us a little bit of energy from the ground? What was that like? And what's the atmosphere like in Ann Arbor?
Yeah, it was electric. It was almost like a holiday. It really was. It was like game day. It felt like we had just had a big win over a rival. I mean, it was just like that. It was electric. You had some old Michigan purists here that aren't used to the Harbaugh tactics. They just have not truly embraced the Harbaugh effect. And so you had some of them that was kind of uncomfortable with the goings on. But by and large, Ann Arbor was a buzz. I haven't seen it like this around here in a long time, and I've been here for most of my life. So it was electric. We had a lot of celebrities in town, and the event went off, like without a hitch. For those who don't know, if you've heard, Michigan put on what they call Signing with the Stars, in which they had a big event at Hill Auditorium, brought in a bunch of celebrities. Including the likes of Tom Brady, Lou Holtz, Mike Shanahan, Ric Flair. I'm pretty sure you heard it on the radio or on the news, all these people. And they were actually introducing their recruiting class as if it was draft day in the NFL. Really a neat experience. The proceeds from this particular event went to raise over $100,000 for the Chad Tuff Foundation. For those of you who don't know who that is, that's the grandson of Lloyd Carr, the ex-coach of Michigan football, who tragically passed away several months ago from an inoperable brain tumor. So all in all, it was a great event, and it was a great time here, and it was quite electric. And by the way, pulling what, the number four recruiting class in the nation, Big Blue is back, baby.
And folks who might not know, my brother Steve grew up with Jim and John Harbaugh. You did as well. Do you have a Jim or John Harbaugh story?
I can tell you now. I didn't grow up as closely as Steve did, but I did have the opportunity on several occasions in the past to meet Jim Harbaugh, and then just recently to meet both Jim and John Harbaugh. I actually met John Harbaugh for the first time this October. We went out to Maryland to see the game, and he was there. But my first experience in actually meeting Jim Harbaugh was still quarterback for the Chicago Bears. And, you know, he's very homebody type of guy. So, you know, right out of Michigan, gets a job. You know, he's quarterback for the Bears in 85, 86 after they win the Super Bowl. Or 86, 87, should I say. But anyway, he's hanging out at this club called the Spaghetti Bender. All right? And he's hanging out just like anybody else. You know, I'm like, he's Jim Harbaugh, right? He's like, yeah. You know, and he was just real down-to-earth cat. It's funny that, you know, he just was real down-to-earth, never got to his head. It's just what he did, playing football. But I've often, you know, I've met him like a couple, two or three times. I find him to be very genuine, very unique type of person.
Yeah, he's a and I wanted to bring you in. I mean, you were on the ground. And, you know, I know when I was in Ann Arbor and I had a chance to, you know, even when they had their practice before their kind of you know, kind of official kind of inter-squad game in the kind of the preseason. It was just, you know, they were kicking off, you know, kind of their, actually in the spring game, you know, it was just the energy that was around the practice was just ridiculous that he has. And so you can feel it. So there was a lot of stuff happening. This has become a very hyped kind of, thing. You know, the crazy thing about it, you know, for some of those players, we'll know a lot about them as some, we might know something about them as freshmen. For some of them, we probably won't know what they can do for a few more years, but, you know, Michigan was definitely on the scene setting the standard. I mean, he kind of been redefining the whole recruitment game here since he's re-entered the college game. And, you know, I think it's kind of shaking some of the folks because, you know, he got the overall number one player in a way that no one ever thought, you know, in the Big Ten overall is drawing talent. So it's interesting given this kind of conversation about the Pac-12 and in the Southeast Conference, you know, what's happening with the Big Ten in terms of beginning to have, you know, two teams in the top, but five for recruitment and kind of how the landscape is shifting and the battles are becoming a little bit more fierce. So that's always good. Before we get deep into it, I got my boy the Hammer in the house. How you doing, man?
What's happening, D. Wells? What's happening, Hank?
What's happening, man?
I know, you know, this is going to be a good night, you know. So how you doing? You know, Hammer's home space is up there in Madison, Wisconsin, jumping around with the Badgers. You know, a lot of change happening up in Madison with old Bo taking his moves, moving on, and a lot of stuff going on. But, you know, how are you doing? And, you know, I know you're a Badger alum, so I know you want to say something about that. So how things going on in Madison?
Man, we did tonight. 11-point victory. Coach Gard got him going. The offense is smoother. Another against Coach Ryan, just the offense looks stagnant with him. Why he probably stepped down. Just the players just weren't responding to Bo. And, you know, Gard's hungry. He's bringing it. He knows this is his job interview. On the job training, and he wants to be successful. And so, you know, we moving towards dancing, D. Will. So, and you know, I'm also a Stanford alum too in Chicago, and it's one of the heard y'all talking about my man Jim Harbaugh. Obviously, I'm a Badger first and foremost, but you know, I love Harbaugh, man. I mean, Chicago Bear, best franchise in history, brought it for us. Then, you know, I'm a Stanford alum as well. I'm a Stanford and a Badger guy, and the way he turned around Stanford was unbelievable. We had some raggedy coaches after Denny and Bill Walsh. Cats that shouldn't be coaching JV, you know, Walt Harris and Buddy Tevens, just disgraces to the farm. And the bottom line is that how about turn around? I mean, obviously he went for that San Francisco job. It just didn't turn out right. But he can go in the kids' rooms and be like, hey, I was in the Super Bowl. I was here, 4 years ago. That's what he told that Gary kid, and he got the number one recruit in the country. So, you know, again, Big Blue's back, and they need to be back. But, you know, they're going to lose the Badgers, though. But they're going to be back.
I beg your pardon?
Yeah, they're going to lose the Badgers. Bottom line is, I mean, Harbaugh's got, you know, he's got a reclamation project to turn around quickly, but, you know, Bucky's going to beat him next year. But the bottom line is I got love for Harbaugh, man. He's my – my second favorite coach to Coach Chris, no question. So, you know, it'll be played on the field. I'm talking smack right now, but it'll be played on the field. But, yeah, things are going well with Coach Gard. Mm-hmm. Coach Gard's going to get us dancing. get the momentum going. The offense is fluid. Bronson looks better. Vito's bringing it. Scioli's bringing it. You know, Nigel's really bringing it. Just seems his element. And so, you know, we're going to make that run to the tournament. And, you know, Coach Gard, I think, is going to get the gig. You know, they're talking about Tony Bennett. Tony's not leaving UVA. But again, we want Coach Gard, man. Coach Gard is a Badger. He's hungry. He's waited his turn. And he's delivering. That's the bottom line. You know, this ain't about moral victories. You know, whoever wins the Super Bowl, if they lose it by 1 point, they lost it. So the bottom line is that, you know, we're winning games, we're moving it, and yeah, we're going to dance, man. I feel it. And we're hype up at Madison. I just got back to the crib, and, man, it was like a parking lot out there, bro. I think people were coming out dancing in the cars, man. We feel it right now. And then we honor Coach Schofield. First African-American coach. It's Black History Month. First African-American coach in the Big Ten in basketball, any major sport. Died tragically, unfortunately, from cancer, too young, but really set the foundation. And he hired someone on his staff, William Bo Ryan was on his staff, and really set the foundation. Wes Matthews, one of the people who came in there. So, yeah, again, things are well here. I'm happy because we were stagnant at the beginning of the year, but not believe, man. I mean, Coach Gard learned from one of the best. We were in the final game against Duke. Duke beat us. But, you know, again, no one's expecting the tournament expecting the championship this year, but are we going to dance? Yeah, we look like we're about to dance. That's about mine. We can dance. We can get up there, so.
And I saw a few more brothers on the floor. I was like, what's going on? I was like,
and Coach Gard recruiting, man. Khalil, Vito, you know, I mean, Jordan Hill was getting ticks finally. He was sitting on the bench, waiting his turn, and then, you know, he's taking advantage of opportunity. You know, Bronson wasn't really but fluid initially, so he got some minutes, and he's earned some time. But, again, this is about, we're a system. We're a deliberative system of excellent coaching, and so, you know, we get good kids in here, recruits in here that buy into the system. I mean, the ones that you know, the one and dones like Ellison and Diamond Stone, God bless them. But you know, again, you know, we lost them. But or the bottom line is that, you know, I'd rather have the Frank Kaminskys or even the Deckers of the 3 or 4 years. But you know, the one and done cats. You know, no hate on Diamond. I love his game. He's gonna be a multimillionaire in a couple months, but. We got kids that are hungry, and that's what we need. Kids that, you know, were passed over. Kids that didn't get that letter from Michigan. They got nothing from Michigan, but they came here and they brought it, and they got scholarships like Shoei, and you know.
Well,
Vito,
if they was
Brown
a big man, they wasn't gonna get no letter from Michigan. Right? But that's another story for another show.
Well, like, again, man, you know, you can talk smack all you want to, man. Like I said,
I don't like. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead,
that's
brother.
That's a criticism of Michigan. Expand on that. My brother's been complaining about that. What do you mean by the lack of big man recruitment at Michigan?
Okay, now listen, and I bleed maize and blue, and I know that Coach Beilein gets a lot of accolades around the country, but for some reason, as long as he's been in the Big Ten, he will not recruit in the paint players. Okay, he will not recruit back to the basket players. This has driven anybody who has historically watched Michigan basketball going all the way back to the times of Joel Thompson and Ricky Green, okay, know that you got to have back to the basket players, especially
you're
in
going
the
way back, bro.
Huh?
You're going way back, bro.
I'm going way back, okay?
You might not know about it. Yeah,
back to 1989 when they won a championship. The thing about it is Beilein wants to play this perimeter game, and he has not recruited well frontline players. He will not recruit the back-to-the-back, and it drives basketball purists crazy. This is why when we watch Michigan's basketball program, when they had big fellas down in the paint, they made it to the championship game, and everybody was on board. They were thinking maybe Beilein finally gets it. Maybe he finally understands what he needs to win the Big Ten. Sure enough. He goes right back to the small, frail white boy and plays him in the middle okay? And this is supposed to be your front line. It drives me nuts.
And it costs them against
Indiana. They are 17-6, so I can't. But, I mean, again, you're like me, man. Again, the bottom line is that you can dance. I mean, we started off so slowly. Dancing for us is good. But, again, we're about championships, man. I mean, we were in the final game. Y'all been in the final game. Y'all won one with that great team, Ramil and all them. So, again, Fab Five couldn't quite do it. But, championship or bust. So I feel that. So, bottom line is that people who say, but we just made the tournament. No. That's mediocrity. We want to win. So, no one's going to remember who lost the Super Bowl come Sunday, several years in the future. In the future, they're going to remember who won it, and that's the bottom line. So I hear you on that.
Title. We're going to get into some Super Bowl talk. I mean, into some more basketball talk, particularly talking about Duke, but you kind of got to the Super Bowl. We in Super Bowl week. And I'm going to start with you, Hammer, on this, and then, Hank, I'm going to come to you on this one. But, what's your opinion on why people like Cam, not this kind of his experience this weekend, as you observe, what Cam Newton's brought to this week and some of the things that he's experienced. Hammer, talk a little bit about how you're viewing this conversation around Cam.
Well, just real talk, man. It's microaggression, racism. They don't like a brother with swagger. And again, I love me some Russell Wilson, our commencement speaker. Give a shout out for Russell. Russell's a different kind of cat. I mean, he's a humble cat. He's a cat that cerebral, as far as he's quiet. Cam has swagger. Cam looks in the mirror, he's like, I'm the man. They don't like the fact about talking about his mother and his child. So what? Again, that's his business with God. So the bottom line is that the brother is the MVP. The brother's the best player in the league. The brother dab a little dance. I don't see them clowning when A-Rod did his thing. Or let's get old school. Gasno used to absolutely clown. And nobody was calling him out. So, again, people want that last thing for Peyton. So let's just face it. We got a very split Super Bowl on demographic lines, hint. So, I'm for Cam. I mean, I ain't gonna lie. I want to see the brothers succeed because I think it's going to help, again, the other young brothers who come up in the game. Because let's just be real about it. Black quarterbacks couldn't even get a play. Vince Evans couldn't get a play. People didn't even get a chance until, you had the James Harris of the world. And so, we had a real talk about it, and some of the people are going to talk about, I don't like Cam because he dances. I mean, come on, man. J.J. Watt dances. So, again, they don't like sweat. They want us to be humble. And, again, I have no problem with the humble brother. If you're a humble brother, be humble, because people have been clowning on Russell, talking about he's not black enough, he doesn't have enough swag. That's not his personality. He comes from – he's a grandson of a major college president. He's a – son of a, God bless his father who passed away, son of a lawyer. His sister just signed a letter of intent for Stanford. They're cerebral cats. But Cam's a smart guy, too. But Cam has swagger bleed, and they're bringing all this stuff about the laptop in Gainesville. Man, come on, man. I mean, that's past. I mean, he made a mistake. He went to junior college, and, he went to Blinn. Guy was up together, went back to Auburn, won a national championship 1 year. So, I mean, stop hating. So, again, we're going to see if he wins, a visceral reaction definitely. But I'm like, whatever. I mean, I want to see the prototype Cam quarterback win this. I love Peyton. I love Elway, as because he's a Stanford man. And again, Peyton's had his ring, man. Had his time. I'm glad to see him up in there. Well, Brady, because it would have been a more intriguing Super Bowl. But the bottom line is that Peyton has his ring, man. I just hope again he doesn't embarrass himself on Sunday. And also, real talk too, man. We got the first Puerto Rican coach that can win a title.
Yeah.
My man, another Chicago Bear, Cal guy,
yeah.
Ron Rivera. So I'm about diversity, so, and I love what Carolina's done without Kelvin Benjamin, without some of the injuries. You know, they might not have Thomas Davis, which is really sad because the what he's come through with the knee injuries and the perseverance. I mean, you come off of three ACLs, that takes resiliency, man. That takes strength, mental strength, man. And he's a great citizen as well. So it's sad for him. But the bottom line, I like Denver. Like I said, Denver gets it in, man. Great defense. I love Talib. I love, you know, Harris, Ware, you know, Von Miller, Terrence Brown, Brandon, you know. But their offense, you know, Omaha is suspect. So...
You know, Omaha.
You hear that all a lot, but yeah. But and then don't sleep on Carolina's defense, number four in the league. Jared Allen's going to try to play. I mean, and you know Finnegan still has a little bit in the tank. So, you know, Super Bowl is going to be intriguing, man. I mean, we have to see how to set the table. I mean, the one thing about Carolina, they got to come, but they can't play 30-minute games, bro. They got to play, like they did 2 weeks ago. They got to play the whole game and kill them.
And we'll
can't
get
play
the
like
deeper analysis.
Against Atlanta. Go ahead.
We'll get to deeper analysis in a minute around that because you're about to get into that. Before we get to that, Hank, build on what Hammer said. How are you feeling about this experience around Cam?
You know what? Here's the thing about Cam. See, Cam Newton, I was thinking about this today. See, Cam Newton's one of them kind of brothers. I kind of parallel it with LeBron James in that, you know, their road was different, okay? You know, I heard Hammer talk about Russell Wilson, who transferred from NC State, went to Wisconsin, was successful at Wisconsin, and did everything the right way. There was some oiliness around Cam Newton. There was a little bit of oiliness around LeBron James. A young man got all these perks riding around in a Hummer, you know, in high school. Cam Newton coming in and seeing that his dad got paid off. He was supposed to went to Mississippi. There was some oiliness around him. Then when he wins the Heisman Trophy, there was some oiliness around the program, you know, at Auburn. Then he comes to the NFL, and he comes to the NFL because he's going to have fun. He's going to enjoy himself, and he's talented, okay? But he was already labeled when he got to the NFL that he was going to be another one of these prototypical running quarterbacks that wasn't going to get it done. Ah, but he fooled them, okay? Just like LeBron fooled them. He came into the league. He wasn't starstruck. He got his game right, and now all of a sudden he's one of the best in the league. And people have a tendency to be very superficial and forget that, you know, what this man does off the field, that he's very charitable, okay? Kids love him, okay? But he has fun playing football. You have not heard of Cam Newton being in any sort of scandal. He's not part of the domestic violence or substance abuse issues. He just goes about his business. He enjoys playing the game, and he enjoys having fun with it. But people cannot get past the fact that he is probably going to be the face of the NFL for the next several years. You know, and so it's like the old guard don't like the fact that not only do you have a brother quarterbacking, you have a brother quarterbacking that's doing work, who is arguably the MVP of the league, okay? A athlete that they've never seen before excel at the level that he's excelling at and enjoying himself doing it. I love Cam Newton. I became a Cam Newton fan truly this season when I saw how he really – I saw the maturity of Cam Newton. I saw that while he was still having fun, he knew that he had to improve and his team had to improve. And I saw that week to week. If you watched any of that Cardinals game, okay, they dismantled that team. They flat out dismantled that Arizona Cardinals team, which people thought was going to beat Carolina and go on to the Super Bowl. Okay, and which, if you think about it, is insulting. When you think about Carson Palmer, he don't even have two good table legs, much less two good legs to stand on. But he was supposed to go out there.
Fools thought that, bro. Fools thought that. Fools thought that, man. I mean, when they lost, I heard.
Did you see what the line was? Okay,
man,
they thought that was going to be an extremely close game.
Yeah,
and my point is this:
Vegas ain't right all the time, man. Shoot.
Now get that. But my point is, it was still a disrespect to what the Carolina Panthers and what Cam Newton did all season. That team lost one fluky game all season. And they admittedly came out and thought they could throw their jock straps on the field and win that football game that they lost. And they learned from that. And they also learned from the Seattle game when they played literally half a game and then had to hang on. That was a complete dismantling of the Cardinals of Arizona. I love Cam Newton. I'm impressed immensely with the Carolina Panthers. And by the way, I was going for the New England Patriots, okay? Because there is a Tennessee-Michigan thing that goes back to when Charles Woodson won the Heisman Trophy that I still ain't forgot. So I won't never pull for Peyton Manning.
And, you know, the thing about it, like you get on some deep stuff here. The thing is so crazy about the whole Cam thing that I'm still trying to figure out is, you know, when the stuff they describe, which is crazy, is stuff they let, you know, people like, you know, Rodgers and folks get away with. They do.
Yeah.
And in the way in which they nuance their criticisms is crazy around this. And I love Cam's unwillingness to apologize. I mean, the exchange he had with the reporter from Buffalo was classic. When he said, you know, he put it on you because, you know, that's Carl and I have engaged in this, some training around this and some conversation about, but that's your implicit bias, right? That's the stuff you bring to the table and you trying to project that on me. I'm not going to play that. And rarely do you have a star who does that in a defiant way, and you can't do nothing about it. And I think that's why he's so unique in this way, because now you can't criticize him for not being able to throw for the pocket because he throwing for the pocket. But then he's still running over you. And, you know, that's why – and the crazy thing about it is how much respect he gets from defensive players.
Right.
Like, usually when you have running quarterbacks and stuff like that, they find ways to knock you or whatever. Like, even though they respected Mike Vick, there's some things about him they would say. When you hear defensive players talk about Cam, they talk about him with great respect.
You heard about Ryan Clark, didn't you? Ryan Clark, like, he got out the way, man.
Yeah.
Ryan Clark at ESPN, you know, now, he said he got out the way.
Yeah, but Cam Newton is not – the thing is about Cam Newton, Cam Newton is the size of a linebacker. Okay, he's 6'6", 2.
DN, bro, DN. He's 6'6", he's 6'6", 260. DN, bro.
260, okay, then I underestimated. He's huge.
Yeah, he's 260,
yeah, the body is, he's coming around the corner like a Mack truck, and he got moves, and he can sling that ball down the field. He's an athlete at that position that they've never seen before, okay? An African-American or a black quarterback that can throw the ball down the field that's big, that's strong, that's powerful, that's got command of his game, okay, and has got command of his offense. It is a new era in the NFL, and, you know, the old guard is having a hard time with it.
So,
yeah, they are, now, is. I mean, bottom line is that the game has changed with the NFL, man.
And so, Cam, we'll go to
like,
the other.
I'll never forget, they try to compare him to Jamarcus Russell. I'm like, that's just, you don't know football, man. I mean, you don't know football.
And I think that was part, I think it's great that you put that out there. How much did Jamarcus Russell affect Cam? Because he was equally as big, equally supposed to be as talented, but his crash was just so brutal.
But his work ethic sucks. He got to the league and thought that, you know, all he had to do was show up. And then the thing is about Jamarcus Russell that makes me mad is the fact that teams was willing to give him an opportunity, but he just was bound and determined to stay in his own way.
But also that purple drink got him too, man. Let's just be real about it. The purple drink got him, man. I mean, that's what got that brother, man. That purple drink is, man, that Dramamine, my goodness. I don't think he was that bad. I mean, but that Dramamine, that's some rough stuff, man. That's why it's illegal. You got ranchers. I mean, like I said, you can't make up a caricature of a drug like purple drink, man. You got Jolly Ranchers and Dramamine and cough syrup. And these cats are flushing down $30 million down the toilet over some Jolly Ranchers?
some Jolly Rancher.
Only in America. Only in America, man.
Yeah.
And that fool was up there, 300 pounds, trying to play quarterback. Like,
quarterback.
I mean, we gave him a tryout. The Bears did, but that showed just how raggedy Cutler was.
Nah, he wanted to stay down in Alabama in his barbershop.
But Cam, I'm praying for him because I think again it'll help the game of football. You know, all this stuff with the CTE coming up with Ken Stabler and you know all this the concussion stuff they're trying to just besmirch football because of the demographics, to be real. But again, I mean, come on, it's like boxing. Like if you're hitting somebody, obviously you're gonna have injuries. And same thing with football. There's a reason why the average player only lasts 3 or 4 years.
Right, right.
Let's just be real about it. I mean, for example, Cam's a perfect example. Cam had an injury when we had that car crash last year.
Right.
He had an injury of 4 games, and Romo had that same injury on the field. And the dude was in a car, it flipped over. So basically, football is like a series of car crashes. Yeah, car wrecks. Yeah, not crashes. Wrecks,
car wreck.
Because people, you know, so car wrecks, and they talk about, but football's a deadly sport, and, you know, but they all worried about it and all. You know, we going to play football, I mean, in the hood, let's be real about it. It's a way to get out the hood, and, you know, the Cam kids and the suburban kids don't want to play it. You know, hey, I don't want to see you because, I mean, again, if you ain't got the heart for it, it six or, you know, or even 10 or so, you don't need to play in the NFL because they'll knock you out. So we don't need you. If we don't need you. If you can't tell mama I want to play and you're going to play soccer or lacrosse or something like that, go ahead. We don't need you. We need Warriors on Sunday. We don't need camp kids on Sunday.
Right.
I know Lamar's probably listening because I refer to Duke as camp kids. But we'll get back to that one another day.
He loves those camp kids. And how are you for Rockford, Illinois like Duke, man? I'm like, are you serious? I mean, I love Lamar as my boy, but.
And he's a Jacksonville Jaguars fan.
Come on, man.
He's from Rockford. He likes the Jacksonville Jaguars and Duke. And I'm just like, it took me a while to understand how that happened. We'll have to get him on air to, like, lay that out. But you from Rockford, Illinois, you like Jacksonville Jaguars and Duke. But his boy is even worse. He liked the Dolphins and Duke. I'm like, what in the last 30, 40 years got you liking the Dolphins? Like, you weren't even born. I'll talk about that later on. But talk about Peyton. So I'll start with you, Hank, because you said this Tennessee thing. But do you think this is Peyton's last rodeo? And, again, where's Peyton in all of this? And kind of how are you feeling about that, your Tennessee bias aside? But, you know, Peyton, who is the other side of this coin, you know, what are you thinking about him and where he's at and his legacy as he enters what could be his final game?
Well, all jokes aside, Peyton Manning is a great quarterback, okay? And he's got some passing records here in the NFL. I think that when you look at Peyton Manning and what he himself was able to do for offenses, you know, especially with the Indianapolis Colts, just he alone, you know, was able to turn a lot of offenses into prolific offenses because he was able to read defenses so well. The one thing about Peyton Manning, I think that when I look at Peyton Manning, given the fact that, you know, outside of a Dan Marino, in which he's won him a Super Bowl, I have a hard time making him one of the greatest ever, because what happened to Peyton Manning is when he got to the big stage, save against the Bears, okay, sorry, Hammer, but y'all had Grossman that game, so again, I'm sorry again.
Yeah, Grossman's garbage, man, yeah.
I know, I'm sorry.
Away from winning the title, man.
Yeah, but my point is that when he's gotten on that big stage, for some reason it hasn't worked for him. And this goes all the way back to college. Okay, if you follow his career, you know, he has him some nice receivers at Tennessee when he thought he was going to win the Heisman. But he had an opportunity to show what kind of quarterback he had in college, and he laid an egg there. Then he gets to the pros, and, you know, their teams were historically winning 12 games, and they get to the playoffs. And, you know, games they should have flat out won. And then even when you look at the year when they lost to Seattle, Peyton Manning lost fine. Now, see, this was the same Peyton Manning that during the regular season would probably dismantle a great defense. He had did it. But I don't know what a switch goes off in his head. And let's not get it twisted. He did not beat the New England Patriots 2 weeks ago. That was that defense. That defense had Tom Brady on his back worse than any hooker in any cheap hotel. I mean, they were knocking him down all over the place. Okay, let's call it what it is. So, I mean, his legacy, would it be nice for him to go out to be able to erase some of those missteps and win the Super Bowl? Oh, yeah, of course. But if you really are being honest, ask yourself, what do you really expect from Peyton Manning on Sunday? And that'll tell you all you want to know about it. Great quarterback, great regular season quarterback. But he was a playoff liability.
Yeah, I mean, again, the playoff record speaks for itself. Peyton just is, I mean, you saw at Tennessee, just did this no resiliency. I mean, this was stunning as far, I mean, the defense got him in the Super Bowl, not Peyton. I mean, Peyton, in the bottom line, Osweiler played right in his hands. Osweiler's dumb. He can't read defenses, and that's why Peyton's back in there, you know, himself. So the bottom line is that I agree with you again. He only won a Super Bowl because of Rex Grossman's incompetence.
Yeah,
and you know we should have a Super Bowl. Lovie Smith should be still the head coach of the Chicago Bears. That's not a story. But yeah, again with Peyton, like I said, I'll give him credit for resiliency coming back for the four neck injuries. But you're right, he hasn't delivered, man, in the big stage. He lost the one Super Bowl, what was it, to New Orleans. So the bottom line is that. You know, his legacy's on the line on Sunday. And I think his legacy's going to show that he was a great quarterback that could win the big game. And he only beat, you right, the Rex Grossman-led Chicago Bears. And that ain't saying too much, so.
Exactly.
So, Hammer, I'm going to stick with you. We're moving into prediction zone and who you got winning. Talk to me about who you got winning and why and what are the keys to it.
I got Carolina winning, and the reason why is the balance. You got Cam, and then also people sleeping on Jonathan Stewart. Jonathan Stewart's come back from injury and just bringing it. And so the line is bringing it. Ted Ginn's really, Olsen. It's amazing what they've done without Kelvin Benjamin this year. I mean, they put a fork in their season. They had Revere on the firing line again when Ben went down in the preseason. And don't sleep on this defense, too. You know, Finnegan, obviously, is on his last legs, but he's bringing it. He wants that ring. He's a dirty play, gets it in. And he's going to make sure, again, that Demaryius Thomas and Sanders and all those cats, man, they're going to work for their catches. So, again, with Denver, the key's going to be, can they get off Ronnie Harmon and C.J. Anderson? I don't see it. They've been very inconsistent all year. I think when they lose this game on Sunday, they got to go get a top running back. The fact my man Monty Ball got cut from there spoke volumes because, you know, again, C.J. Anderson and Harmon just haven't brought it this year and haven't brought the balance to the offense. And the main thing is that they get behind early, they're done. And that's what I think is going to happen because Cam's is a different type of beast, man. They're not going to be able to rush him like DeMarcus Ware and Miller did and Derek Wolfe, great players, but you know, and again, they got a great defense, but the bottom line is going to be Cam, to Olsen. Going to exploit that weakness in secondary. Josh Norman's one of the most overrated players in the world. And I definitely see, again, Stewart, you know, really, I mean, Cam will be the MVP, but Stewart will really be the key as far as setting the table. I mean, his running has been amazing, and he really has taken over you know, for when they let D'Angelo go and be a lead back. And also, they had the luxury to put him down and have Artis Payne come in there and Fozzie Wigger come in there and give him some rest and get him ready for the real games, which is Sunday in Santa Clara when they're going to hold up the Lombardi Trophy. And my man's going to dab it up for the crowd and, again, show them what it is. So I got Carolina. I don't like to say scores, but, you know, what comes to mind, 27-10 or something, but, you know, I don't care. A win's a win. There are no more victories in sports.
There you go. So, Hank,
I'm gonna tell you, when I go back 2 weeks ago, I think about the Denver Broncos at home with that incredible defensive game against the defending world champions, who had all their weapons were injured, and you had an immobile quarterback, and yet that game came down to a 2-point conversion, and the questionable coaching call by the genius Bill Belichick, not to kick a field goal with about 5 minutes left in the game. Otherwise, we'd be talking about another matchup. With that being said, you go back on the other side, you look at this team where they have weapons. They have a very capable tight end in Greg Olsen. You have two nice outside wide receivers. Then you got my boy from Big Blue, Devin Funchess, who actually caught a touchdown pass last week. You got a running game, which New England did not have. And then you got a running quarterback. Then you can blitz him if you want to. But the man can simply chuck it down the field, and he can make you miss. And you're not going to be able to arm tackle him, and you're not going to be able to just knock him down or intimidate him. He is more intimidating than that. That being said, when you look at this game, anyone who was looking for a tight game, you have to go to Peyton Manning playing the game of his life in the Super Bowl, okay? And then you have to then ask yourself, okay, is he capable of doing it? Now, he might, but I wouldn't have to. If I had to put a gun in my head, I wouldn't go with it. I'm looking for Carolina to win this game. I'm looking forward to be close in the first half simply because of nerves. But I expect Cam Newton to blow up by the second half. I don't think Denver's defense can play 60 minutes, and I don't expect their offense to generate anything. I'm looking for a score of something like 34-14, Carolina, and yet my man's going to be dabbing all over the place. And I hope they let him be the MVP, and the NFL don't embarrass themselves by doing something stupid.
I'm gonna go back into the stacks and get some of our podcasts that were around when Cam was being drafted, because I was in this intense debate with a number of folks, Game Changer and Phil T and others and Ray and all these folks about Cam, because I was talking about why I thought he was going to be a great quarterback. And my eyes, when I watched him at Auburn, just told me something different than what I was hearing some of these draft folks. And you go back and read what folks wrote about him, and it almost felt like, I was watching something different than folks was watching. But one of the things that I realized about Cam, if you say nothing else about him, in these championship game moments, he lives for it. If you watch
yes,
him, this
he does.
Week, he is so relaxed. This is the moment. If you're going to beat Cam, you need to beat him in the first round of playoffs. You need to beat him prior. But when he's in these kind of moments, there is no one who embraces and leans into this moment more than him. I mean, he is relaxed. You look at him, and then you look at Peyton, tense. You look at him, and not relaxed like he underestimated the moment. Relax because he knows this moment and he knows he's prepared for the moment. So that's one aspect of it. And I think from a strategy, I think y'all hit some things. I think Denver had, everybody's talking about them being a top 10 defense of all times. And, I'm analytics people kill me with this because you got to contextualize things, but they are great defense. But I think one of the things that's difficult for their style of defense is the way in which Carolina runs the football, given that Cam, you just can't account for the quarterback. Most people who play defense, we never account for the quarterback running. And not a quarterback who runs like a running back. It ain't a Michael Vick, like all we need to do is get one shot on him and we're going to be okay. Like just wait for our shot, we'll knock out the game. You can't hope to knock him out the game. So when
right.
you think about the running game, it's the kind of thing that can isolate their rushers on the outside, because you got to be – they're not going to tee off the way they try to tee off against Tom Brady, because they got to respect the fact that Cam might be running. So that part, I think, is – and I think he has as much of a command of his offense and the way it runs as the sheriff has of his offense. And you watch him at the line. The other thing that I think on the Carolina side is the linebacker play. I think if Cam don't get the MVP, Luke Kuechly will, because the fact that Manning can't stretch the field, he's going to be throwing short routes. If those linebackers are extraordinary in getting under routes and getting interceptions. When you think about – when you talk about Denver, and I know Denver's got a great group of front seven, but the difference is how these linebackers play in coverage. And I know Davis is going to be mending the arm and all these other things. But I think Keekly getting back into the curl, allowing him to get up under routes, don't be surprised if he pick one and take it back.
Right.
And so
right.
that the ability for them, those linebackers and how they play is going to be extraordinary. And so I agree with you. I don't like getting the scores, but I do. I think it's going to be in that range. I think it's going to be, you know, something like, 27-17 or 32-34, 14, something like that. With a really a push that's late in like the third, fourth quarter, where they kind of push away on it, where Cam gets his juices. It starts to flow in, starts to doing the first down, dabbing on him. But he is made for this moment. So it's going to be exciting. It sounds like all three of us are going with Carolina. You know, I think it's going to be a good game. I just think where they might press is in the fourth quarter. I think they might get one or two touchdowns in the fourth that'll stretch that thing out to 14 in a way. Let's deal with a couple other football things here before we take a break. And I'll go back to you, Hank, since you there. Megatron. Now,
right.
Let me start with this. I grew up in Michigan. Everybody says, why aren't you a Lions fan? I reply to people and say, name somebody who coached the Lions who's gone on to coach another team. In all my
right.
lifetime, I've never seen it done. And people talk about Barry Sanders, and they talk about Megatron, but I'm going to take it back. They forget Billy Sims.
They do, yep.
You know, they think it just started with that, but Billy Sims, who was, to me is the most underrated, forgotten running back, you know that. I mean, and so
– Yeah, not to me, not to me. For the fools, yeah.
Not
I mean, Barry, but Billy Sims was a beast, but he got – I mean, the – modern medicine wasn't there yet, brother, and so sadly his career was cut short. But and with Mega, the bottom line with Mega that the pain. Again, he wants to not be arthritic and be able to move around in his 50s and 60s. So he decided to turn it in. He'll be a Hall of Famer. It's sad about it, but like we talked about, football is a rough game, man. I mean, football, the average person. It's 3 to 4 years, man. That's it. So, the fact Megan.
You know, I tell you, I think that if you look at him right now, what he's still in his prime. Okay, yeah, and you're right. He's been beaten up, but if this team had a decent playoff run, let's say that they had a couple of key injuries, but they were on the cusp of the playoffs, and dare I say, on the cusp of a Super Bowl. And they were going to make a couple of more moves. I believe that he would give it a shot. I think he would come back. The reason why he's contemplating is like, listen, this ain't worth it. The one thing about the Lions, the Detroit Lions, is that they are consistently inconsistent. That's the one thing you can say about they are consistently inconsistent. They go 0-16. They tease you. They let people stay over there that have no pedigree of winning. You know, let them just destroy this team, dismantle this team. They have no plan. They draft players they don't need. They draft players that can't play. And if you are somebody like a Calvin Johnson and you're 9 years into the league, you see, it's not lost on me that Barry Sanders got 9 years into his career and said, enough, okay? And he left after a 5-11 season, too. Well, when he left, they were 5-11. Megatron leads at 7-9. These two guys are two of the greatest players to ever play the Detroit Lions in the last 20 years. The fact of the matter is that if they were with somebody else, if he was with the New England Patriots, I think he would try to strap it in for another 2 years, okay? Because there is an opportunity to win a championship. If he's with the Pittsburgh Steelers, he's probably going to try it for another 2 years. There's a chance to win a championship. Okay, those teams have got pedigrees of how to win, how to get there. If he was with the Chicago Bears, well, maybe not the Chicago Bears. But if he was
Chicago Bears, he'd be, we need him. We need him better than Alshon. Y'all want Alshon now, so.
Well, listen.
I'll take him over Alshon.
That's my point.
Let's trade
that's
up.
That's my point.
Too.
All of a sudden, you throw out a name out there, an Alshon Jeffrey, okay, to replace Megatron. Have you even done your homework? Do you need him? Okay, you've already got Golden Tate over there. This is what I'm talking about.
Y'all can have Alshon. Man, Alshon is a fragile, and he doesn't want to play in Chicago either. So y'all can have Alshon.
I don't want
him right now.
But see, here's the thing. I'm not a Detroit Lions fan neither. I just live here. Okay, the thing about it is, you know, that's why college sports is so big here in Southeast Michigan. Because, you know, those poor Lions fans, every last one of them, that's why Henry Ford Hospital is so popular. Because they got ulcers and stress-related stuff going on. I gave it up a long time ago. I'm just telling you the truth. And when you see players just going to give it up in their prime, and yeah. Now, see, Megatron hasn't even had any head-related injuries. A lot of his is with his ankles and stuff like that. Granted. Football-related injuries are tough, but you telling me he's quitting? He's quitting because he doesn't want to go through another rebuild with this team. And if you're asking me, I don't blame him. I don't think this has anything to do with his health. I think that if he really was with a team that was going to seriously contend next season, he would play. But he does not want to rebuild and deal with this crap another year. The Lions just got a new GM. They're keeping their coach. The old lady, 91 years old, is making decisions for the team. It's ridiculous. It reads like a sitcom.
Well,
okay?
you thought Caldwell should have been fired, bro? I mean,
listen,
it was his fault.
I'm not saying he should have been fired. When you get to the point where you don't even know, the man started 1-7. Okay? The old lady comes up, oh, I love Jim Caldwell, and he keeps his job. Okay,
they got rid of Lombardi's kid, and they put in Joe Bob or what's his name?
Yeah, Jim Bob Cooley.
All of a sudden, they beat
a bunch of teams that none of them made the playoffs. Okay, save the Green Bay Packers, who was dysfunctional at the time. Okay, and he saved his job because he beat Green Bay in Green Bay, and he beat and he won on Thanksgiving. All right, against a team that fired their coach. All right, so, I mean, the thing about it is if you don't have a direction, if you're already going to dictate to your GM, your new GM, what you're going to do, then, yeah. And if you're saying to Megatron, what guarantees have I got that we're going to be able to contend next year? All right, and that's the thing about it. I think the reason why he hasn't come out and said I'm done is because he wants to wait and see. But because right now there's rumor that he may not quit. You know, that's all I need to know right there. He said, I might want to play. I just don't want to play with y'all.
But, Hank, how much of that is an indictment of Stafford? I mean, you know, I got all my problems with Georgia football because, you know, other than Hines Ward, that I love as a Steelers fan. But Matt Stafford, as much talent as he's supposed to have, he drives you crazy. And the only reason people don't criticize him like they criticize your boy in Chicago is because he somewhat looked like he engaged. But I see him
He's much more likable than Jay Cutler, okay?
Yeah.
He's more likable than Jay Cutler, okay? He's more of a team player. But let me tell you this, okay? If you talk about Matt Stafford, you mentioned Georgia. Go back and look at his senior year in Georgia, and go look at the tape from 2016. He's the same quarterback. There has not been any progression from his college days. He still makes the same boneheaded plays. He has cost more offensive coordinators their job because he ain't got it in between his ears. They don't want to get rid of him because he's the most talented quarterback they got on their roster. That's an indictment on that franchise. He got no competition on there. They had Kellen Moore and Don Orlovsky as the backup quarterbacks to Matt Stafford. You would have thought he was Tom Brady or somebody. He didn't deserve that. He needs to have competition.
Stafford's a great talent, but nothing between the ears and bad decisions. And it's just, he's got first overall talent, and he's got Mr. Irrelevant, IQ, so football IQ, so.
Right.
That's a problem. That's why he's a mediocre player. So, I like Stafford. Won me a fantasy league 1 year. I mean, he's hot and cold, but the bottom line is that he's not what he should be. He should be a prolific passer with his talent. That I think, again, yeah, Mega's gone through a lot of injuries, man.
I'm
going to
say
Mega
a Hammer. I'm
going to
say
money.
That's my indictment of Hammer.
So I agree with you. Maybe, yeah, if he was playing for the New England Patriots, then he wouldn't retire. I mean, he would take it more, you know, like C. Woodson did. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, again, the fact that he said before the season this was going to be his last year. I mean, they went 1-7, obviously put fuel in the fire, but. You don't know. I mean, again, football is a rough game. Barry left early. Everyone would argue why Barry left early. You know, Billy Sims left. It's a brutal game. And so it matters the point of quality of life you want. Do you want to be like Earl Campbell where, you know, you literally cannot walk up the stairs in your house? You
right.
got to stay downstairs.
You know you got an organization that can win. You like Davis. Well, you're going to play with a fractured arm. Because you believe that you can get it done.
Exactly.
So, you know,
these players that have retired early, go back and take a look at who they played with. Go back and look and see who they played with. They're not going to sacrifice their body, all right, and they ain't winning. They might as well get out the game now.
Yep. And so I think that's something. Well, we're going to watch this. Yeah. We're going to come back. I'm going to bring y'all back. We're going to see how this as we get closer to it. The Raiders in Vegas, man. You know, man, I've been in Vegas, and I am kind of surprised that they haven't had a franchise in Vegas. This is the thing is crazy. People talk about not having a franchise in Vegas, but the Giants are right in there, Atlantic City. Like, nobody says anything.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody talks about why you can't have a professional team in Vegas, and we got kind of professional teams all around Atlantic City where there's gambling going on. So it kind of, but you hear about the Raiders in Vegas. I think you got the Raiders. They're trying to, you know, work
San Antonio,
on what happened with San Diego, whether or not they can get in that deal. But Vegas, what do you think about Vegas as a market? Let's start with you, Hank, and come back to Hammer after this.
Listen, okay, here's the thing. You know, the NFL just being greedy. One thing they keep talking about is the sports gambling, the legal sports gambling in Vegas. I question whether they would even have a fan base in Las Vegas. All right? You just said yourself, you in Vegas, there's a lot to do in Vegas. All right? And also, it's 1,000,000 degrees in Vegas. Okay? Even in December. So my point is this. Is if you're going to move a team, you can build a giant stadium if you want to. Are you going to be able to fill it? Okay, and is Las Vegas a place, or is just are you just selling the stadium itself? All right, that would be my question. It's like if you're going to put a professional franchise there, you have to at least wonder if you're going to have a fan base for that franchise. It don't make any sense to me. It don't make any sense to me because I don't know how the franchise itself is going to make any money. Okay, I don't know how you're going to develop a fan base for the Raiders in Las Vegas.
I totally disagree. I mean, people love football. First of all, they're lying. LA transplants. Oh, go ahead, sorry.
I'll get you in a minute. I think they're banking on the thing that people from the Bay Area and LA already go to Vegas. Like, it's short flight, their behavior, you know, Southwest Airlines. I mean, they can really leverage both those historical fan bases in addition to growing it. But Hammer, let me get you there. Let me get you, bring you in, because I think that you were going along those lines, and then we'll come back to it. But Hammer, why don't you go? I think that's where you were going, so go ahead and talk about it.
Yeah, you have a lot of, let's just face it, I mean, I lived in Cali for 4 years at Stanford. Cali's outpriced people. People are moving to Vegas. There are a lot of fans there. I disagree with my brother Hank about, I think that Vegas would support a team. I think they want a team. They want to be in the major leagues first. I know they wanted a baseball team. So the bottom line is that, I just think that they're making a mistake with Vegas. I mean, Vegas is a party place. Football is a great game. It's only once a week. And the build up to the atmosphere of partying would be tremendous in Vegas. And I would love to see a football game in Vegas. I love to go in the summer league in Vegas. It's tremendous. So, I just disagree with Brother Hank on that.
Well, again, let me just say this though, and just to parlay on what you were talking about it being a party place and a gambling place. Okay, now if you're going to unless you're going to do something with illegal sports gambling, okay, and which I know the NFL claims, I don't believe it, but they claim they got an issue with that. But, you know, that piece in and of itself, are you going to pull people, I understand what you're saying about the party and stuff, but are you going to pull people out to go see the NFL? Now, the reason why I say that is because there's people who love the NFL in Jacksonville. There's people who love the NFL and other team in other cities where the teams absolutely suck, and people aren't going to come out to see them. So I'm asking if you are you going to develop a fan base that's going to go out to see a mediocre football team in Las Vegas when there's so much to do there? That's my question. So I just wonder how that's going to work. I mean, because they've tried that. Other sports franchises have tried that, where they've tried to put sports franchises where there's really not a homegrown fan base, and thinking that having a professional franchise there is going to help build on it. And quite frankly, they're struggling. Look at the Tampa Bay Rays in baseball. That team's gone to the World Series, been a decent team. They can't get anybody in Tropicana Field down in Florida. And it's warm. It's got other stuff to do.
We're going to do this. Y'all got this thing going. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a little musical interlude, take a breath here. We're going to come back and talk a little bit more about this. We're going to talk about Johnny, what's going on with him. We're going to talk some pop culture stuff. Kanye stuff was crazy. We're going to get into a little bit of People versus Simpson and really put that out. May hit the Oscar boycott, may not. We'll probably go with that. And then we're going to give time, because you know we got the man from inside the park to give us a little bit more on what's happening here in the winter season on baseball, get us up a little bit on that, and then we'll close with some NBA stuff. But, you know, I want to take a little break, let my guy DJ Slick take us in a little bit. We'll come back and make this happen. You listen to One Mic on the Real Sports Guys platform, our other premier podcast going on with that. And I'm here with my man, Hank and Hammer, and we're having a good time, and we'll be back after these messages.
What up, everybody? It's your boy DJ Slick, rocking here with RSG. Let's do it big. Let's go.
Right about now. About to be possessed by the sounds of MC Raw Face and DJ Easy Rock.
Hit it.
I won't ever slack up. Punk, you better back up. Try and play the role and you're the whole crew will act up. Get up, stand up, come on, throw your hands up. If you got the feeling, jump up, touch the ceiling. Monthless or bump club, someone's talking junk. Yeah, I'll bust them in the eye, and then I'll take the punks out. Feeling funky, amps in the trunk. And I got more rhymes than the cops that a junkie's gonna stop. Sure enough, I got pops from the kids on the hills with my mom and my pops. I came to get down, I came to get down. So get out your seat and jump around.
Follow us on Twitter at Real Sports Guys. And always friend us at Real Sports Guys Radio on Facebook. And always, you can always catch us at RealSportsGuys.com. Thank you for supporting us. RSG.
All right. Welcome back to One Mike. This is D. Wills. We're here with One Mike with Hank and my man, the Hammer, talking about some good stuff. And we left off a little bit talking about the Vegas and what was going on in terms of the Raiders. But we're going to get a little bit into some pop culture stuff, guys. A lot of crazy stuff. You know, it's funny because athletes want to be entertainers. Entertainers want to be athletes. You know, I just want to break away this real quick on this stuff. We put too much time on it. But, you know, athletes are great on Twitter and social media. There's a lot of stuff on there. But Hank and Hammer. Hammer, I'll start with you. Did you see the stuff on Kanye and Amber Rose? What was your response? You Chicago guy. What went down?
There?
Yeah, he might not be there, but Hank, why don't you go with it?
Okay, listen, all I heard was Amber Rose's response, to which I said, oh my, I mean, what just happened? You know, and I'm like, that I could have gone my whole life without knowing that, you know, so, Kanye, everybody know, Kanye is Kanye. Okay, I mean he's a polarizing character in and of himself, and if you ain't seen Amber Rose and you're a man, then shame on you. So I mean, but I mean that's your fault. But but people don't mind telling their business these days. That's all I can say about that. That's the only comment I could possibly make about that real quick.
It was crazy because I was like, I look at the responses, and the funny thing, that's the most humble I've ever seen Kanye. Because he always got something to say. When she dropped that one on him, he just went straight humble on that.
Yeah.
So it's a lesson, particularly, you know, our athletes are always on there, but you got to know where you're going. You got to be like an attorney. You got to know the answer to that question before you ask it. Because Mama came in and dropped that bomb on him so tough, I was like, and he sat down. TMZ came up to him. He was headed to the airport. He was all humble.
What you going to say? What you going to see? You know what that means, right? You know what that means, right? That means she had some more stuff. All he had to do was give her a reason. and she was going to light him up. See, anytime a dude is quiet, like, come on now, fellas. Anytime a girl that cracked on you once and you don't come back hard, that means she got some more, and you know it. it's your best move to shut it down right now.
And I was thrown off, man. I could not believe it. Enough with that. People versus O.J. Simpson.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of the youngins out there, if you under 30 maybe or whatever it might be, you know, I remember I just had a conversation with my daughter. I watched the first stint of it on TV, and I explained to her, particularly with the line when he talks about, the fact that he wasn't black, he was OJ, in this kind of whole context of race. And we had this really good conversation, and she was trying to explain it. And then they showed the next scene to the next show where he came on. And Dard was in the hood, and the folks in the hood was like, OJ ain't black. And in the time when I was having this conversation with my daughter, she was like, oh, that's what that means. And so, like, the historical times were crazy about that. But can you remember where you were when he was in the Bronco chase?
I can't exactly tell you where I was at. I was at home watching the NBA Finals. I was watching, it was New York and Houston. And Dayton, who were some of the players of that? Akeem Olajuwon was still playing. Mark Jackson was playing. You know, it was a pretty entertaining final. And they break. And the next thing they know, because they thought that you see this Bronco going down the street. They say, O.J. Simpson is going to commit suicide. Al Cowlings has got him. It's the slowest police chase. I'm like, what's going on? Because from that point, they had made him he was questioned, but they hadn't yet made him a suspect in this thing. And then all of a sudden they would say that he had did it. And so the police had come to arrest him. And he drove that I won't ever forget that. That was the craziest thing. I was watching the hoop game and I was like, what the heck is going on here? You know, they just cut the game off. And they followed that thing all the way till they got to his house, until they picked him up. It was the most surreal thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. And coming, out of the Rodney King situation, right? You like, I don't know what these folks gonna do to him.
Uh huh.
And you got people on the bridge. You got people on the bridge who are talking about this, right?
Right.
And so. That's amazing. You know, I mean, they're like waving to him, and just the crazy thing about it.
Yeah, they had signs made and stuff. You know, we believe in you, OJ, and all this crazy. It was silly. And then the thing was how quickly that turned.
So where were you when the verdict came down?
I was at work. Now I'm gonna tell you. Now this was weird. I was at work, and I work at the hospital, and we was in this waiting area, and I mean there was a bunch of people there, black and white people, were in the waiting area when they read the verdict, and I mean you're talking about emotions that literally split along racial lines, because without getting all into that, if you're watching that, folks who haven't seen it. Pay close attention to it, but it literally split along racial lines, and it wasn't, historically, the Rodney King thing had happened like in '93 or something like that, '94, and so people were still into this thing, understood what was going on, but I will never forget that when they said he was not guilty, black people literally cheered, and white people just kind of like slumped. And, I mean, they looked at the black people cheering as though, they hated them. I won't ever forget that. That was here in Ann Arbor. That's the kind of impact that verdict had, and to the point where people were not talking to each other. They literally were not talking to each other for a minute.
Yeah, I remember. I was recruiting for a small college in the Midwest, and I was in Ohio recruiting back roads, coming from a career fair on my way, I think, Cleveland. And I remember being, cheering, but then being nervous about driving and getting to Cleveland through these back roads.
Right.
You know, as if, you then became very nervous because you're like, folks ain't gonna let this go. And
right.
It was, like you said, it was amazing because it was the first time in history that black folks felt like they won in a court of law.
Right.
Especially after
right.
coming out of that decision around Rodney King, you had NWA and you had all these, you had public, you had the whole, this kind of national movement around this kind of rebellion around how this was happening, going down. And this was like so public because you had Johnny Cochran, because we had never seen an attorney with that kind of swag.
Right.
Right. We had never seen somebody who came at it like that and had that much of a command. And so,
right.
You know, that part was that was amazing, you know, for us to see that you actually could counter the power structure. And so, and OJ was really that first athlete that transcended, you know, people talk about Jordan, but the juice really laid the blueprint for Jordan. And people, because they don't know it, it's kind of like folks don't realize, remember how good Isaiah was as a basketball player, because everything
right,
happened.
Right.
But OJ was doing this big before Jordan. He was the rent-a-car guy. Like,
yeah.
He was doing this thing at a level where you're talking about access to brand and marketing and money. You know, everybody kind of linked stuff to Jordan, but it was really OJ for people who really grew
right.
up. And I don't think there are a lot of folks who don't understand how big he was.
No, they don't. They understand the criminal piece, but, you know, you're absolutely right. He made movies. He was in big movies. You know, after his football career, he was the first NFL player to rush for 2,000 yards in a season. I mean, he had a very successful collegiate NFL and, you know, a movie career. You know, it took a lot of people by surprise that he was, involved in this thing. But there were so many twists and turns to it. And the TV show, I don't want to relive it personally, you know, but
yeah.
I wouldn't begrudge anybody watching it. But, I mean, the thing about it, it just has so many twists and turns. And I know that, you know, as a black man, you know, I really didn't want him to be guilty. I liked O.J. Simpson,
yeah.
And I really didn't want him to be guilty of such a heinous crime. And then there was just so much that you could just tell that was seedy and not done right, you know, it got to the point where it wasn't even about justice anymore. It was just about winning. I think Johnny Cochran definitely brought that to the forefront, that this was all about winning. And it wasn't about the law anymore. It was about what can I do to win. I don't think we'll ever know the whole truth, but it was a point in history that if you lived through it, you know, it was a drama, real life drama, and it was in everybody's houses and everybody talked about it.
And the reason why I think it's important to watch, man, I didn't know Kim Kardashian was in the room, standing there. They might have, you know, embellished about it, but Kim was there when he got in the Bronco. Father left Kim in the room with him to make sure he was okay.
Wow. Yeah.
A teenager.
But see, a lot of people didn't realize that her dad was
yes.
one of his attorneys.
And one
you
of
know,
his best friends.
Huh? Yeah.
One of his best friends, too.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people didn't realize that the Kardashians didn't become the Kardashians until after the O.J. trial, okay,
yes.
and it was because of her dad.
Yes,
because that name wasn't out there until that trial. Not like that.
Nope. And you know, we all know, you know, the Johnny Cochran and, you know, what he was all about, his world class litigator and what that meant moving forward. And so it was great.
Right.
I want to give some time to you, brother, because, you know, inside the park and everything else. Yeah, I want you to – I'm going to give you a few minutes. I ain't going to interrupt you. Just to talk about where we are in baseball and give you a chance to hit some things. It's freestyle. This is what you need. You get your baseball on. Even though we're in the midst of football, I'm going to let you get this shine.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, here we are in the first full week of February. Love is in the air in a couple of weeks, and yet in 3 weeks we're going to be talking about spring training. That's right. That's when the smell in the air gets a little different, the grass gets a little bit greener, the air gets a little bit moister, and then you hear that crack of the bat on the ball, and you can smell the leather of the gloves. And, boy, I love this time of the year. You know, we for us baseball nuts, you know, we can't wait for the World Series to be over so we can get into the hot stove league and the winter meetings and see who's going to be on our teams. You know, we got a team in Kansas City that went from also-rans to making the playoffs for the first time in 20-plus years to, lo and behold, coming back and winning the World Series. And while I feel good for you Kansas City fans, I hated being a Detroit Tiger fan because for some reason we decided to finish dead last, but I digress. You know, there's been a lot of great moves that's already been made this off season. You know, we're seeing movement of some great players. You see, for you all in Boston, you've got David Price to toe the rubber for you out there. And here in Detroit, we've got Jordan Zimmermann to toe the rubber. You know, and we're just going to keep it moving in baseball. Yoenis Cespedes has found a place. Justin Upton found a place. We actually in Detroit, we got two Uptons. We've got Kate Upton and we got Justin Upton to go with Justin Verlander. We got a whole lot to watch over here. You know, I saw something on the thing that says, y'all going to lose my mind. We're going to have an Upton here and an Upton here. So I can't wait for that to happen. I'm telling you, baseball is coming. They've had the Hall of Fame voting, you know, this year. So, you know, I still look for Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens to get in. Say what you want, but they transcended the game and they deserve their spot there. You know, so we're going to keep it tuned. We're going to keep it rolling for baseball. When the weather starts changing and you hear the crack of the bat, it's summertime, people, and it's only around the corner. You know, like they said, the groundhog didn't see his shadow. Spring is around the corner.
And when you think about some of your early predictions and things like that, you know, who are you thinking about coming out of nowhere next year? I mean, who do you think going to be that surprise team? You know, I think with the Royals winning, you know, and again, I mean, we thought about the Royals as being this dominant squad. The Royals,
right.
The Orioles, you know, I mean, they were ongoing. And now you feel like the Royals have finally found the right mix to get back and also give that great community a competitive team. But where do you see that next team coming out that is really building it the right way?
Well, the Royals really set the tone, you know, of speed, defense, some power, you know, and just they really play what I would call fast break baseball. And so that's what a lot of teams are trying to get to, and they're trying to increase their team overall team speeds. The big bopper type of teams are falling by the wayside. But if I really had to take a look and see who to keep your eye on the Houston Astros, look at them. That's a nice young team. They got a nice mix of veterans and youth. They've been building for a long time. They made the playoffs for the first time in the American League next year. Look for them to make another step forward. I look for them to really challenge in the West. Look for the Chicago White Sox. That's another team that you might want to keep your eye on. Ain't nobody paying a whole lot of attention to, you know, in the American League. In the National League, watch out for the Florida Marlins. You know, that's a team that, you know, or the Miami Marlins, should I say. I'm dating myself. You know, they're quietly trying to piece together a nice little team, and I'm looking for them to make a run. Another mix of good youth and veterans. And then look here, I'm going to make some folks happy. Watch out, I'm looking for the Chicago Cubs to really make some noise this year. You know, they look good. Theo Epstein is one of the baddest GMs in baseball. It's not going to be too long, Cubs fans. I honestly believe that this year could possibly be your year. Watch out for them.
And Theo, I mean, he knows how to counter a curse. He knows how to build it the right way. He's going to make sure all the black cats in Chicago are sold or captured.
Right.
He's going to do whatever it takes to get it going.
Look,
now, Detroit.
He's amazing. You know, he's got him a manager that knows how to get it done on the field. You know, Joe Maddon is a genius. They call him the mad scientist. You know, that's a great mix for that squad. They're not, look here, last year I really did think that was going to be it, but the Mets came out of nowhere on us. But I don't think that's the case. You watch out for the Cubs. I think that they're prime now to make a long run.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, this has been great. You know, we had the hammer on, and he had to go here early for us, but we had an incredible time. I'm going to have you both back for the next couple of podcasts of One Mike. I know Hank and I have talked about integrating Inside the Park into some of this stuff, and so we're gonna have some fun with it. So you'll hear Hank on One Mike that we'll be having here over the next few weeks and up through baseball season. So he'll be a mainstay, and we'll be adding pieces in with us to do this. It's been fun. If you haven't had a chance to listen to the big show as well, check us out at realsportsguys.com. Check out that Hustle and Flow. This is a great new podcast with Sekou and Game Changer, kind of intersection between hip-hop and sports. We got a lot popping here in 2016, and we're just trying to make it happen. Enjoy your Super Bowl weekend. Be safe. Be relevant. Be good. Have fun. This is RSG, and we love having you here and being on the journey with us. And, you know, we'll keep it moving until next time. Have fun and peace. And as we used to say in the back, in old school and hair grease, out.